Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Lynn S. and I am a recovered compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. Today is Thursday, April the 17th, 2025, and we're continuing our study in the Big Book. On page 91, the chapter Working with Others, we're on the second paragraph, When Your Man is Better. And we'll be reading and commenting on that one paragraph only. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Claire E., 12 Traditions, Patrick O., and readers of the text, Martha Z., Nick F., and Carolyn S. The reference numbers for yesterday, Wednesday, April the 16th, the 7 a.m. meeting, 22347. That's 22347. And the 10 a.m. meeting is 22348. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And this morning, Claire E. is going to read this 12 steps for us. Good morning, Claire.
Hi, Lynn. My name's Claire E. I'm a compulsive eater and bulimic in the UK. Thank you for letting me do service. So the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many thanks. Have a good meeting.
Thank you, Claire E. And Patrick O. is going to read the 12 traditions. Welcome, Patrick.
Good morning. I'm Patrick, compulsive eater from Tennessee in recovery. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for a group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any facility or outside enterprise. The money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees strictly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions. Everyone reminded us to place principles before personalities. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick O. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book. We're in the chapter Working with Others on page 91, the second paragraph, When Your Man is Better. And Martha Z, could you please read for us? Good morning.
Good morning, Lynn. This is Martha Z. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater by the grace of God from outside of Philadelphia. When your man is better, the doctor might suggest a visit from you. Though you've talked with the family, leave them out of the first discussion. Under these conditions, your prospect will see he's under no pressure. He will feel he can deal with you without being nagged by his family. Call on him while he is still jittery. He may be more receptive when depressed. Good morning, my friends in recovery. So that last two sentences, call on him while he's still jittery. He may be more receptive when depressed. And I thought I would just tell you the story about the day that was my bottom. So it was my habit that I would get up real early on Saturday mornings and do the food shopping. And I had two young daughters, so they stayed in bed and slept. They were, you know, with my husband. And I would get up early and do that. But during the whole week, I ate compulsively. And then I was not overeating on the weekends. So every weekend, I was going through withdrawal. So I was jittery. And anyway, so I come home and I broke my rule. And my rule was that you never go back to bed. So I went back to bed. I don't know how this happened. Everybody is in bed with me, my two daughters who are 4 and 6, and my husband, and I am crying. And tears streaming down my face, and my younger daughters wiping the tears off my face, saying, Mommy's sad. And I'm laying there thinking, I can't do this anymore. This is horrible. Look what's happening to everybody. And anyway, somehow they left. I got down on my knees, and I had called the treatment center the day before. I knew I needed to be stopped. I was very depressed. I was in complete bondage to food. I couldn't do what I wanted to do. I couldn't stop doing what I didn't want to do. And I knew I wasn't who God wanted me to be, or the wife or the mother or anything else that he wanted me to be. So I'm down on my knees. I say to him, God, you know, please help me to get the help I need. It doesn't have to be this treatment center. Just, you know, and If I start doing better and decide I don't need to go, help me to go anyway. So it was a Saturday. I had called them on Friday. They actually did call back, and they said, can you come on February 15th? So that was in 1989. So I did go to treatment, and I every day I prayed for the willingness to do whatever I needed to do to recover that day. And so it is now 36 plus years later, and so grateful. My daughters are 43 and 41 now, and I have really good relationships with them. I'm so grateful. And every day I pray to be the mom that they need. And I know that they would be different people if they grew up with me and my disease. So very grateful. And the other part, if I don't know how much time I have, when it talks about the family, something about the family avoid. Anyway, my contact with the family usually happens after I've been working with someone for a while. And then I really get to know the family and have them be part of this whole recovery process. So anyway, thanks for letting me share. So happy to be with all of you.
Thank you for getting us started, Martha Z. The line is now open for sharing on what we just read. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day so that others may share their experience too. So if you shared on Tuesday or Wednesday, please step back and let others have their turn. And please say your name just once. It does help me hear everybody. Who would like to share?
Janet B.
Reva P.
Tina S.
Lisa B.T.
Sandy S.
Vasa O.
Great. That's a great lineup. Thank you, everybody. I'll tell you who I heard. Janet B., Reva P., Tina S., Lisa B.T., Sandy S., and Vasa O. So if you could tell us where you're calling from when you introduce yourself, that would be great. And Janet B., let's start with you this morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Lynn. Good morning, everyone. This is Janet B. from North Carolina. What an awesome lead share. So my eyes were drawn to that last line, he may be more receptive when depressed. And I was thinking about in my early years in Overeaters Anonymous where I couldn't stop binging. It was 6 or 7 years in OA, going to meetings religiously, like multiple meetings a week, multiple sponsors, multiple assignments, and unable to get better. And when they say depressed, I mean, that's an understatement. I couldn't stop. And I would sit in meetings and say, I can't stop. And I remember one time sitting in a meeting and saying, I'm so depressed, I'm going to take a razor and cut myself. And all people did pretty much was say, thank you for sharing. And then keep coming back, it'll get better. Well, six, 7 years in, it wasn't getting any better. When I came around, I was binging somewhat. 6 or 7 years later, I added bulimia to the list, and I was throwing up to 6 times a day and eventually had to have my esophagus surgically retightened. I got false hope, right? But I was receptive. And what is the message I needed to hear that finally, thank God, I did hear? And that is not just keep coming, you'll get better. I mean, think about it. If I'm diabetic and I go to Diabetics Anonymous meeting and they say, just keep coming, it'll get better, but nobody tells me that I have to inject insulin, I'm going to get progressively worse. And there I was getting progressively worse because I got false hope that just keep coming would do it, that just putting my butt in a chair at a meeting would do it. And that's false hope. And finally, thank God, I got the real hope, which is to start and telling me that I was hopeless, that there was nothing I could do on my own power, and that only an act of providence, only a miracle could help me. But that this book tells me in 12 steps how to have a miracle. That I start out admitting I'm powerless, that I'm beat, that I'm whipped, that, you know, to just keep coming won't do it. And then I do this work of clearing up the wreckage of my past, coming to believe that a loving God can restore me to sanity, making amends, and then living a life connecting with God and helping others. And that if I do that, my food obsession would be removed, which in fact it was. So finally, I just always thank God, or actually I should thank him even more, for Donna B., the woman who, when I was depressed and at an OA convention, eating compulsively there, she held up a big book and said something to the effect that she hadn't binged in a year and it was possible to recover. So if anyone out there is jittery and depressed today, I am telling you, it is possible to recover with these 12 simple but not always easy steps, and at the end of them is a miracle. And with that, I pass. Thanks, Lynn.
Thank you, Janet B. from North Carolina. Next up is Reva P., followed by Tina S. Hi, Reva.
Good morning, Lynn. This is Reva P., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. I'm just so appreciating the shares. So the first thing that is striking me is that I'm under no pressure, and I'm not supposed to nag people. And I am so grateful. I had an aunt. I actually thought, you know, what I was doing with food was a secret, but my family knew. But I had an aunt who I knew was nagging my mother to talk to me about it, do something about it. I don't know what they were thinking they would even do. And my mother didn't. And I am so grateful, because just knowing that the aunt was sort of on my case via my mother, I think I just got harder into the disease. It was just the defiance. I was so not receptive at that point. The other thing that strikes me, just like other shares, is that more receptive when I'm jittery and depressed. And for me, I was terrified. For me, that last binge, I was throwing up and not even trying to throw up because the binge was so bad. I was sick and ended up going to the hospital because I just couldn't control the throwing up. And, you know, I was receptive then. I was receptive. I was referred to an eating disorders clinic, and I was also given the contact information for Overeaters Anonymous. Reminder for me that to this day, not just, you know, at my bottom, I am receptive when I'm disturbed, when I'm in emotional, thank you God, it doesn't have to be the physical pain anymore, spiritual pain. When I get to those places where I can't tolerate this. I just can't tolerate this. And it's more than the physical. It's like I cannot sit with this disturbance, with this anger, with this fear. That motivates me to keep pressing in, doing the work, and seeking deeper and deeper connections, relationships, power through my higher power. The other thing I want to say is, how skilled is this technique that we're being taught here in this chapter? You know, if somebody would have shoved the solution and the God in my face right away, I don't know if I would have stayed. But people talked about themselves and how they were where I was at the time and their bottoms. And it's almost like a sales pitch where you determine or convince the person of the need for something before they want to buy the product. And I was convinced that I needed it because I was told nothing else was going to work, and my experience was nothing else was going to work. So thank you, God, for the wisdom in these pages and for the people who approached me. With that, I pass.
Thank you, Reva P. from Toronto, Canada. Next up, we have Tina S., followed by Lisa B.T. Good morning, Tina.
Thanks for your service, Lynn. Tina S., recovered compulsive eater, anorexic in Florida. Yeah, well, some great shares this morning. So grateful to be in the right place. You know, it actually, after the first share, it really took me back to when I first came into recovery. And, you know, the first time I came into recovery, I went to a treatment center. And I still was not out of options. You know what I mean? I still thought that somehow, some way, someday that I could do something about this disease. And, you know, and I remember being at the treatment center, and I didn't participate in anything. And the solution was in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember remember that. I flew from Pennsylvania to Florida, and all I did was I played basketball outside and I laid in the sun, and I really never went to any of these groups, and I wasn't missed, you know? So it wasn't my time. But when I came back in, what I do know was that I was defeated, that I was depressed, and that I had lived in this hell for long enough. And so I was willing to do something different, and I am so grateful. So grateful that at that time when I was ready, the message from my first sponsor was out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that she told me that I had an allergy of the body, an obsession of the mind, and that I could continue to diet and take care of that allergy if I didn't put those alcoholic foods into my body. But that obsession of the mind would not be taken care of by a food plan, that I had to work 12 steps to have a transformation. You know, and you know, at the time I was like, you know, I didn't even know what she was talking about, if it would work. And I didn't even really care because I was at that place of complete defeat. And I would say, let's just try this thing. You know, and she told me stuff like lack of power was my dilemma. The food was but a symptom. You know, and all I could do was just follow some direction. I was at that point that I would just follow some direction. And I had some hope. I love that that was talked about. I had some hope that maybe this time it would be different. And let me just tell you, that time it was different. You know, so I continue today, when I talk to somebody, I let them know that they have an allergy. You know, I don't sugarcoat this stuff. I let you know exactly what it tells me in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, because those are the instructions, that this is what I have. And if you're a compulsive eater like me, you know, this can help you too. You know, and, you know, I'm passionate about the Big Book. You know, I am in love with recovery, you know. And for me, even that I just said that, I was like, oh, thinking back when I came in, oh, God, I'm saying I'm in love with recovery. I am today because I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. I am free from this disease one day at a time, as long as I do the work. And with that, I'll pass. I'm really looking forward to some more shares. This is a great paragraph. Thank you.
Thank you, Tina S. from Florida. Lisa VT, it's your turn, followed by Sandy S. Good morning, Lisa.
Hi, good morning, and my name is Lisa BT. I live near Toronto in Canada. I am a very grateful recovered compulsive overeater just for today. And again, as we so often say, thank you so, so much for this meeting, for all who are here, whether you're listening or whether you're participating, you're helping me, so thank you. I wanted to chime in because I had a conversation yesterday, you know, that just a person in on her journey was telling me that she felt that she was absolutely at rock bottom, and she was very, very sad and a lot of tears about that. And we just talked about sort of her journey and so on. And I just said, well, how are you, what are your feelings about program at this point? She said, you know, it's funny, different. I see that I need this and want this now. She said, I've been around, but I always kind of felt a bit like that was those people, and that, you know, that really wasn't me, wasn't, you know, so bad for me. And I just saying to her that my experience has been, when I'm looking back on it, that actually, in getting to my bottom, which was actually a gift, but also it showed how much had happened already. You know, the bottom kind of can feel like sort of the end of the road, but you know, we know in this program that it's often the place where a person is ready. And having been a person who's not been ready for a long time or thought I was fooling everybody, just when she was sharing that, I just shared that from my experience that you know, although, you know, it was scary and, you know, it felt like I'm at the bottom now, that actually was maybe an opening. And so, you know, we just talked a bit about, you know, she was going to get in touch with her sponsor and so on, but I just felt such joy when she said, yeah, I'm identifying in now. I really didn't for such a long time. And I know for me that saved my life. And it involved a lot of humility and transformation for me to get to that point. And it was a gift. I didn't get there by myself. So with that, I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa B.T. from Toronto, Canada. Next up, we have Sandy S., followed by Vasa O. Good morning, Sandy.
Hi, Lynn. Sandy S. from Asheville, North Carolina. It's Sandy with an IE. Currently in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. You know, when I think of where I was, depression, I actually made a suicide attempt because I was so disconnected from everything except food. And for me, the spiritual experience occurred in OA when I was eating. It was like my second year in OA. And I said to this woman who just had this light, this spiritual light in her eye. It was in 1976. I said, I don't care about anything except food. I have no feelings for people. And this was like directly from God. She said to me, Sandy, compulsive overeating and love cannot coexist. And I filed that away in my brain. This is a story I've told many times in OA. And like around 6 months later, I was in bed with a boyfriend, new boyfriend, just hugging. I mean, we were just lying down in bed, hugging. And this light, I don't know what it was. I'm telling you, I will never know. It was the most important moment of my entire life. For some reason, out of nowhere, a light was going from my heart to his heart. And it was an experience of love. I mean, it was so much better than the food. I had that thought, and I remembered Gloria. And I said, this is better than food. And I was done. I was done with food. It was... You know, this is what makes me believe that something greater than myself can restore me to sanity. Because there was nothing that anyone or myself could do to change the experience that I was having with food, that I would experience something so much more fulfilling. And that's what's kept me abstinent all these years. Because as I'm talking about it, I can actually feel it. I can actually, just as I can remember the pain of deciding I am going to kill myself. I cannot take being in my brain anymore. I just can't take consciousness anymore. I can't take it. And I was willing to overcome my fear of death to end the pain that I experienced in being conscious. And then I had this miraculous thing happen. And I just want to share that what I'm so grateful for is I know that came from God because I have a lot of trouble believing in God. But to me, the second step is the most essential. Is there? It's like that question, God is everything or God is nothing, and what was my choice to be? And I just want to share. Thanks. I'm on day 56 of an incredibly loving relationship with a new soulmate. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Sandy S. from North Carolina. Vasa O., good morning. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Lynn, and good morning, everyone. I'm Vasa, grateful, recovered, compulsive, overeater, and I'm calling from Port Charlotte, Florida. And nothing tastes as good as abstinence feels. At the beginning, I said, this is torture. How am I going to give up this alcoholic foods that I loved and lasted over 25 years of my life since we came in America. And it was the first time I heard about Overeaters Anonymous was I read in Dear Abby years before I came to the program. And she said for people that have food problems, you know, go to Overeaters Anonymous. And at that time, I was not very much overweight, maybe 10, 15 pounds. But it was getting progressive over the years. And believe me, it's not like I did not try to put the food down. I just did not know anything about the allergy of the body. So what I do working with others, I work to the best of my abilities, you know, like I do, like my sponsor worked with me. And this book was such a gift for me. She gave it to me. She came from Alcoholics Anonymous, but her food addiction was number one. Food was her number one addiction. And I read this book right from the beginning to the end. Believe me, not in one day, you know, but the first one, the foreword for to the first edition. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from seemingly hopeless state of mind. And this is where I was when I came. And I remember saying, well, if this alcoholic, if this worked for them, then I need to do what they're doing, you know, so I could recover. And that's what I did. I needed to put the food down. It was my first night of my first meeting from Overeaters Anonymous. And my sponsor said, this is going to work. The best way it's going to work if we put the food down and then work the rest of the steps. So she 12-stepped me for about a week, and I was pretty much abstinent for the first week without even going to the meetings, you know. And maybe that was good because my mind was a little clearer, you know, what I was hearing there. Yes, I was a hopeless person, and, you know, I was very depressed because I tried to put the food down for years, and I couldn't, you know. And my life was unmanageable, and I'm grateful. Right from the first meeting, I was ready. I did the first three steps. I can't, he can, I will let you, whoever you are there, please. I remember thinking when I was really deep into my food addiction, if somebody gave me, this is embarrassing, if somebody gave me a pill filled in with a poop, you know, I would have taken, if that was going to take care of it, you know. So I was so desperate.
Fine,
I would have even, thank you. Now, I would have even done that too. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Vasa O. from Florida. For those of us who might have joined us a little bit later, just to let you know where we are in the chapter Working with Others on page 91, the second paragraph, When Your Man is Better. So the line is now open for sharing on what we just read. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day so that others may share their experience too. So if you shared on Tuesday or Wednesday, please step back and let others have their turn. And please, say your name just once. It does help me hear everybody. Who would like to share?
Miriam J.
Larry K.
Kim A.
Nick F. in Tennessee.
I missed the person, the lady right after Larry K. I think the last initial was A.
Kim A.
Thank you, Kim. So
thank
far
you.
I've got Marion J., Larry K., Kim A., and Nick F. Who else would like to share, please?
Christina J.
Anyone else? Okay, so our lineup is Marion J., Larry K., Kim A., Nick F., and Christina J. Good morning. I don't know if it's Marion or Miriam, but good morning.
Good morning. Miriam J. in Massachusetts. Thank you for your service. This paragraph, the end of the paragraph, really struck a chord with me. When I was in the food, if somebody had talked to me while I was still eating, I'm not sure I could listen. Very, you know, no matter how much I wanted to stop, I was in the food. However, if the longer the time between me putting down the food and trying not to eat and the message, then my disease kicks in. Because almost every time I binged, given a day or two, it was, well, it wasn't so bad. See, we're kind of doing okay now. And and I would not have been open. But that the morning after, when I felt guilt, shame, remorse, totally out of control, that was the golden opportunity. And I'm very, very grateful for the people in the program who were willing to continue to say to me, there is a solution. There is a solution, and it's not eating. And, you know, today I'm gratefully recovering, abstinent, and, you know, looking for those opportunities to share that message, even if it's just showing up at a meeting and claiming my seat. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Miriam J. from Massachusetts. Next up, we've got Larry K., followed by Kim A. Hi, Larry.
Hey, Lynn. How are you? Good morning to you. Thanks for your service. I'm Larry K. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Chicago. Yeah, I'm going to tell you a quick story, try to make it quick, about someone I knew in a sister program in AA. And, you know, came into program with, like a lot of us, with lots of issues. He was a very sick man. But he became well. He had some sort of transformation. And then he was very talented speaker. And so he kind of got on the circuit a bit there and was asked to speak and so forth to a lot of places. And he tremendously helpful. He ended up doing big book weekends and that type of thing. And for me personally, not to make a couple of people on this line cringe, which I will, but he was on the par with like a Harlan, and now I'm going to really make her cringe. Leah, you don't hear her too much, but Leah, and you know, for me anyways, on that par, just really people that bring the words out of this text and have brought it alive for me. Okay, for me personally, he was on that level. And the thing about it is that he had a great grasp of maybe a natural talent for history and for interpretation of the big book and metaphor and analogy and all that stuff, which is really helpful to people. The thing about it is, what I will tell you about this man is he's dead today of this disease. He died in his alcoholism. And what I will say, I was angry about it because what a talent and what a God's child. And he was well-versed in the theoretical aspects of the journey. He could read the map really well. Are we studying this map? You see this text in front of you? If you have the big book anywhere nearby, are you studying the map? Are you beginning to understand the theoretical aspects? Do you understand the pathways, the landmarks, the routes? Can you quote chapter and verse, but then fail to apply that knowledge to our actual experience? It reflects a common human tendency to become armchair experts. We accumulate information without taking the necessary steps, literally, figuratively, to make it practical. I'm going to piggyback a little bit on what Janet had to say, because we can procrastinate, we can following directions can be daunting. Next thing you know, we can have all this information. It's really talks about, you know, there's an interesting contradiction because, you know, knowledge versus action. They're not the same thing. They are not the same thing, knowledge and action. This isn't a problem of action. If we come here sick and we know and we learn the map, but we don't follow the directions, we will either remain sick, or we will very soon become sicker than we ever thought possible. We will be in trouble before you know it. Before you know it, you're going to be in trouble. I know this from personal experience. So I love this paragraph. I love this chapter. I don't want to be an expert at the map.
Time, please.
At the text. Thanks, Lynn. I don't want to be an expert at the map, but not know how to take the directions. With that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry K. from Chicago. Kim A., it's your turn, followed by Nick F. Good morning, Kim.
Hey, good morning. This is Kim A. from New York City. You know, this chapter, just like the rest of the book, gives us really specific directions, what to do and what not to do. And what to do is show up and talk about ourselves. you know, nobody wants to be spoken to about their own illness, especially by somebody who doesn't, like, know them. But, you know, Ebby had such a huge influence on Bill, you know, when he showed up sober after a few months, you know, fresh skinned and glowing, because Bill knew how Ebby drank. So when we're showing up, and by showing up, I mean, you know, in person, on the phone, even like on a flyer, like whatever that means for the kind of service that we're doing, we show up and we talk about ourselves. You know, we don't have to launch into like a whole story about, you know, our eating background, but we're the only ones that can carry that message of depth and weight, right? We learn that back in the doctor's opinion. And we also learn about that cycle back in the doctor's opinion. You know, they're saying that it's helpful, basically, if you tell your story when somebody is coming out of a spree, it can often be, like, more helpful because the person is more receptive. And
Kim, you're really choppy right now. Did something change?
No, I'm just lying on my bed.
Maybe it's my phone. I'm sorry. Keep going then. Apologize.
It might be me, but okay, I'm going to just keep going. Sorry about that. So anyway, yeah, in that cycle that they talk about in XXVIII, Dr. Silkworth is saying that when we come out of this spree, we're going to be making yet another resolution, right? Because we come out feeling so ashamed and so full of guilt and remorse. And this whole, like, powerlessness, making a resolution cycle is just going to continue until a person has a psychic change. I kind of feel like I'm all over the place here, but I guess that's okay. And that psychic change is what we get from working the steps, right? It's a slow, at least for me it was slow, personality change that we get when our thinking is changed. It's a change in our psyche, a psychic change. And that's the only thing that's going to arrest that need to take that first bite. That first bite has nothing to do with what we're eating or not eating. It has nothing to do with what's on a list of any kind of, you know, foods that we want to avoid, or has nothing to do with triggers. It's all about our minds. Because the first bite is what sets off the cycle. So if we can avoid taking the first bite, yeah, sometimes we can avoid it by just not eating no matter what. But that's just willpower, and eventually that's going to give out. That's
the time, please.
Thanks. The psychic change has to come from working the steps as they're written in this book. Thanks for letting me share. I hope I came through loud and clear. This is Kim A. in New York City.
Thank you, Kim A. from New York City. Nick F., it's your turn, followed by Christina J. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning. Can I be heard, Lynn?
Yep, loud and clear. Thank you, Nick.
Okay, thank you. You know, there's a lot of, I'm Nikki F. from Tennessee, a recovered compulsive overeater. I love you, family. Good morning. You know, before I talk about the text, I just want to share, you know, I pressed star one a couple of times. I don't know what happened, but just the people who might be scared to share, if you press star one and they don't hear your name right away, just keep pressing star one. At least that's what I just had to do and have to do sometimes. I don't know. But I'm glad you got me, Lynn. Thank you so much. It said, if you're, where is it? Under these conditions, your prospect will see he is under no pressure. And then I looked at the last paragraph, and it said, if your man needs hospitalization, he should have it, but not forcibly. And then in this paragraph, it says, he will feel he can deal with you without being nagged by his family. Calling him while he is still jittery, he may be more receptive when depressed. You know, for me, I'm an addict, multiple addictions. Thank God, multiple levels of recovery. But what I heard at one of my other meetings is, you know, I'm an egomaniac with the inferiority complex. I don't need anybody to make me feel small. I already felt small. before I met you. But the food, the food is the great persuader. When I get jittery, you know, when I was jittery and when I was very depressed, that's when I could hear somebody. You know, I think at times, you know, I try not to make people feel small for having this disease. I get to understand that we're all sick. But this book is telling me a very creative and a very real way that I need to carry this message. At least that's what's been my experience. You know, I remember my when I got here, you know, it was just my sponsor said, pray to any power for help to stop killing yourself with sugar. She didn't point her finger or throw her finger, you know, and like what was said, you know, I didn't, she didn't get to meet my family until later on. Like, she didn't have to make calls. And I know we do different things these days, do this deal a different way these days. But, like, this book gives me a way of doing this. I get to put kind of what I say, my own swag in it, but I still got to do it the way that's being laid out, you know, and, I don't know. Sometimes I hear people talking about, you know, that vision for you. We, you know, we're doing this real hard thing. It's really for me, the food has spoken to me and let me know that I need to be here. So I learned to have thick skin on this end, but I can't forget where I come from. And I'm sorry, I'm kind of all over the place. I guess I'll write a 10-step about a few things. With that, I pass. I'm glad to be here, y'all.
Thank you, Nick F. from Tennessee. Christina J., it's your turn. Good morning, Christina.
Good morning, Lynn. Good to hear you on the line. Good to hear everybody. What a powerful group of shares so far. I was nagged by my first husband indirectly by ugly looking at me like I was ugly, making little snide comments when I would gain weight. But, you know, the biggest family I was nagged by was the family in my head. I was nagged by guilt and shame. I was nagged by needing to be validated, loneliness, jealousy, fear, all of it. I was nagged and nagged and nagged, but I didn't know how to stop eating. I had no tools. I had no steps. I had diets, and I failed them every time. And how does that make you feel? You know, you become like, even if you don't consciously are aware of it, you become like a failure in your soul, but you keep trying. You know, life is very painful on its own. And I didn't have anything else to use for. I went to all the therapies. I went to spiritual gatherings. I went to all these places. And I have to tell you, I've had many relapses, and they all come from life and being nagged by everything in my head. And without diving into this program deeply and taking the journey that I've had to take with it, I hadn't come to the place where I could know that this is the only thing that works. I have to want this beyond all the nagging of a family member or the guilt and shame in my head. I have to want this for my life, to save my life. I have to know that this is the only way through. I really have to know it, that the food is not an option. The food is not, the first bite is not an option no matter what. If I'm tired, lonely, angry, whatever, halt, the old hungry, angry, tired, and lonely, or lonely and tired thing that we used to say in OA. So I don't need any nagging. I've already been nagged enough. I have to have surrender, and I have to sacrifice the God of food. I have to sacrifice the God of food and cry out to the God in my soul. And I have to reach out to fellows who are, many have said on the line, are my God in skin. And I have to make it through those painful times in life. But I don't have to do it alone now. I have this program. I have you all. I have to be willing to pick up the phone or make a text and say, I am under pressure right now and I want to eat, or I don't want to feel this. Please help me. Please pray for me. I have done that so many times, and how many times has it helped me? The times it hasn't helped me is when I haven't done it. So I have been jittery. I have been all these things over and over and over. And until I really want it, until I've gotten to the bottom of myself, I won't do anything. In
until I really realized this is the only way out, and I've already said this several times. So if you're out there, it's okay, wherever you're at, because I believe if we're here, we're being called to be here, and whether we leave program, come back, whatever, this is the journey home, the journey to be free of dis-ease of the soul and of this horrible eating addiction. Thank you so much, I pass.
Thank you, Christina J. We have time for two or three more shares. Who would like that time, please?
PP.
Okay, I heard you there, Pete. Is there anyone else?
Lee H.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. So, Pete, please go ahead.
Thanks, Lynn, for taking the meeting. Appreciate your service. My name is Pete B. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm recovered today by God's grace and mercy. And I don't have a timer, so you could just cut me off when you're ready. But, you know, see him when he's depressed. You know, nobody enters. I've never experienced it. Maybe they do, but I've never experienced anybody who enters the universe of recovery, you know, as a matter of insurance. You know what I mean? Like, everything's going okay. I just thought I'd come here to prevent getting the condition, right? Everybody, you show up, at least I did, you show up, you know, defeated, right? And that's where we need to be, right? We need to be completely defeated because this process asks us to do things that are counterintuitive to most people, especially people that have the condition, right? And the last thing we want to do is we want to tell people about, you know, the wonderful world of recovery and what living recovered is all about, because people won't relate to that, right? We show up, and like was been said earlier, and we talk about ourselves, right? We're trying to build rapport with somebody so that they'll understand that we've come from where they are, right? And we also have to be the other thing that we have to be cautious of is you have to be cautious of how we describe what we are doing and what we do, right? Because nobody in any state is going to want to buy into that, right? What we need to do is make sure that they understand that we have the condition that they have and that we have, in fact, recovered, right? And we walk free like the program tells us we're going to be. But when these people are in this depressed state, this hopeless condition, right, the last thing in the world they're going to want to hear is here's what you're going to have to do. Go to a meeting, 2-3 a day if you have to, right? You're going to get a sponsor. You're going to tell them about every decision you're going to make or ever going to make. You're going to report your food on a regular basis. Anything you put in your mouth is going to be reported to somebody. They're going to approve it or not. Throughout the day, any decision that you feel, good, bad, or neutral, you're going to share with somebody else. Help them process it. At the end of the day, you're going to write a report and send it to 11 of your friends. Right? People come in here so desperate that they buy into that as the solution, which is not the solution that the big book points out. Right? The big book points out a process of having a spiritual experience, right? Learning to trust and rely on the one that has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Right, it tells us that reliance on other people, no matter who they are, is going to leave us falling short. Right, so those are the things that we're not supposed to talk about. All we're talking about when this person is in this condition.
Time, please.
With that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Pete B. from Pennsylvania. And Lee H., good morning. You're going to be our last share this morning. Lee, welcome.
Well, thank you so much, Lynn. Great to hear you on the meeting. And this is Lee H. in Tennessee. And these discussions are just wonderful. And I had to speak up. I have a situation that my sister is in the hospital. She overdosed on pills. She's anorexic. She's in a financial bind. She's in debt. And I'm just sitting here, you know, listening to all these great shares about helping other people, because that's what I want to do. I want to help. But I can't enable the situation. And that's what my family is sort of used to doing, is just kind of, you know, helping her out of her financial bind is not the answer, as we all know. And the greatest thing that ever happened to me, and this was many, many years ago, my mother, it was an alcoholic and needed help, and we tried to do an intervention with her, and our counselor said, look, if she chooses to go to treatment, that's great, but if she doesn't, you need to get help. You need to get yourself into a program and start going to 12-step meetings. And I had no idea what she was talking about, because of course my mother was the problem, but that was God speaking to me, because if I had not gotten into these rooms, I would have ended up being exactly where my sister is. And bless her heart, I want to help her, but as somebody else has said on this line, the best thing I can do is recover, recover, recover. And I just, you know, can be praying for her that God will reach her just like he reached me. And she has a higher power. And I need to just pray for her. So thanks so much, Lynn. I pass.
Thank you, Lee H. from Tennessee. Thank you to everyone who shared. And thank you to Team Thursday. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. And the share ID for today, Thursday, April the 17th, 7 a.m. meeting, is 22354. We will now close the meeting, followed by a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Nick F., would you please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Can I be heard?
Yeah, we got you there, Nick. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. It says, our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. I will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We should be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until.